Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam.
Hi, this is Chris.
Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. And Chris and I wanted to talk about a topic that I asked him about, and right away he had an emotional response, I'll say, a very specific response. And I was like, all right, we got a good one here. So the question I have for him, or topic, was the difference in the way reliability guidelines and the things that affect how it's implemented are executed at different levels of management. So going right from, let's say, the first level manager all the way up to, let's say, the CEO and all the steps in between, how is it different and how does it change? So, and I think that you had some experience, you know, with that you wanted to share.
Yeah, my experience with that is that I've seen reliability talked about on a CEO level, with, okay, we got to have reliability. It's important to us. And maybe on the first line management level, you also have some support. But somewhere in the middle, it seems to break down often, where management says they want reliability, but then maybe they don't really know what that all means. And that's fair enough. And when it comes to funding reliability and the impact it can have on programs or projects in terms of cost or time, that's where it breaks down sometimes. There's always the pressure to go to market faster in product development, and that's all fair and understandable. But reliability and quality sometimes get the short end of the stick in that battle.
Yeah. To me, I think that the really funny thing is that the people who are trying to consciously implement it, you know, we're kind of saying that maybe at the bottom level, the lowest level engineering manager who's managing engineers directly has a great concern for it, feels a sense of accountability. And we're saying at the top, the CEO is very disconnected from it and is not doing things to ensure that the reliability practices are being upheld. But the thing that amazes me is that the actual ownership of it long term is the inverse. The lower level manager will be on to another project long before reliability in the field's a big issue, right? It could be a year out, 2 years out. I mean, there's products that have been out there for 2 years and then they have a huge issue that spikes, right? So that engineering manager is pretty far removed from the program at that point. But the executives are the ones held. Their feet are held to the fire with massive field failures and massive warranty expense. And it can go as far as Wall Street. I've worked with companies where they've had massive field failures and they need calculations because Wall Street is demanding projections on, you know, losses for upcoming quarters. Pretty serious stuff where they can be held accountable for having estimations that are too low or too high. And, you know, here we are trying to estimate it based on what's happened. So that to me is the most interesting part, that the people who are going to be held accountable the longest are not the ones ensuring the methodology is being implemented. And the ones who are not going to be held accountable at all are more interested in it. It just always seems so strange to me.
I think once a company is facing costly recalls in the field, that's when the CEO actually will make sure that things happen on the ground floor and make sure that the funding is there. But in companies where that hasn't happened yet, it's much, much harder to justify the investment in reliability because the ROI is over such a long time frame. And I think that's hard to articulate to a lot of people.
Yeah. So is it that simple? It's short-sightedness in the sense of do you have things that are on your table that are demanding your attention right now, time to market, certain technology being created, that you don't you can't pay attention to this thing that's hanging out there?
Yeah, I think it has to do with that. And when you talk about accountability, you're right. The development teams often hand things over to the operations or lifecycle management team. And yeah, the field failures aren't so much their problem anymore, unless they really get pulled into troubleshooting and that starts distracting from developing the next big thing. But if that doesn't happen, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, so what can we do as reliability people to really, and, you know, help them help themselves, right? Because it is the executives, you know, as a consultant, it's the executives a lot of times that bring me in and have me, you know, because they want these tools and methodologies to be a part of what their engineering teams are doing. But then it's amazing that they're the ones creating a program structure that inhibit, you know, them really being able to take full effect. So what would you do if you were king for a day? What would you change?
What I'm trying to change right now is to come to a common vision of what the reliability for a category or a product should be and get buy-in and agreement from all sides, you know, get marketing's input, engineering's input, finance, and say, hey, this is where we want to play on a reliability level. And these are the reliabilities we want to have for our individual product lines. And hopefully, I'm hoping that by having that defined and everybody agrees to it, we can start planning it into the process, allocating time and money, and also alleviate things like, okay, we only need a certain level of reliability. You know, if you're making consumer products, for example, you don't have to have an aeronautics program level of reliability for your product. And to just clarify what that level should be upfront, I think it's going to be worth a lot rather than when you come to the testing phase in the development process and you start saying, you know, I want money and time for this test. And the answer is going to be, no, we didn't budget for that.
So the difference of just saying you want to improve, you know, you want the reliability to be better versus having a specific reliability goal, it dramatically changes the way people respond to it. If you just say you want to, you know, do this to make reliability better, it's very easy for there just always be a blanket no. But if you reference a reliability goal that was previously established by the team and not just the engineering team, but the marketing, the sales team, it's part of the product specifications that were created to take a certain market share, you know, the high level program objective. Now you're tying that request to something that can be measured. And the other big plus there is that there's also likelihood of finding opportunities for cost reduction, right? Because as you're doing these reliability methodologies, you might find out that subsystems or components far exceed the reliability goal needed, you know, as you were saying. And you then can offer this very short-term return on the investment, right? Because we're always challenged with the fact that reliability has such a long return on investment when we're talking about mitigating failures in the field. Well, here's an opportunity to give a return that's immediate before product release. Hey guys, we see an opportunity for design cost reduction here. So I think that, you know, linking that to that specific goal and not just the ambiguous improving reliability.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. I've unfortunately not been in that situation yet where I've had, you know, the testing time allowed in a project where we find, okay, we're over designing this. We can take some money out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can see that is a very good use of, and like you're saying, short term gain for reliability.
Yeah, the times where I've seen that be effective is when there is, it's usually not in the reliability testing you find an opportunity for cost reduction. You know, that's would be very difficult. You might, but it's, you know, less likely. What's more likely to happen is when there's a cost reduction initiative at the end of a project, when they suggest reducing the cost somewhere, they think they see an opportunity, you can use the reliability tests to help ensure that they haven't taken out so much margin or that they're increasing the failure rate to do the cost reduction, right? So effectively offering them the boundaries that they can work within to do the cost reduction. And that can be very helpful because there is kind of always that debate that happens for the cost reduction initiative of how far can you go to where you're used too much margin or mitigating a functionality. So that's usually where the opportunity for the established reliability tests and results can be very helpful.
Yes, I've definitely seen that approach and seen that approach work. I almost think of it as, again, saying no or saying stop to people that want to cut more costs out. So you're in a way that you could be seen as the bad guy. You could also be seen as the good guy that helps them if they're coming from a responsible side and saying, hey, we want to save some costs, but we do not want to affect reliability and quality in the field, then you're the good guy working with them and guiding them to the right design level. If they're coming from the point of we got to reduce cost at all costs, then again, I think you're going to be the bad guy as a reliability engineer saying, hey, this is too much.
Yeah. Yeah. And but that also comes down to then more fundamental culture things. Is the team, are they all holding the goals, the product goals together, or have they each aligned, you know, a specific goal to their discipline and they're competing to win, which unfortunately is, you know, the case quite often where, you know, if you are somebody tasked with cost reduction, then you're going to basically be given goals of reduced costs by 80%, right? And that's the only thing that's going to be important to you.
Yeah.
So this is kind of one of those things we're talking about where management has set up a product development culture that is going to undermine the possibility of creating a product that reflects all the goals that were set out in the beginning. There's no way you're going to have the product be that balance of, you know, the cost point, time to market, reliability, you know, features if you're having them all be held by individuals and competing. Because when you compete, you're going to have a winner, right? So, you know, that comes down now you're talking about politics and organizational structure and side negotiations and, you know, it ensures that there's no way. So, yeah, exactly. So that definitely would, I think you're right though, cost reduction often does happen that way when it is its own initiative as opposed to being a part of the like DFX idea, right? Design for a cost as being something that the whole team carries the whole way through.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in a lot of ways that DFX part is going to be critical for what we're talking about. And maybe that's part of what we're talking about with, you know, because we start off talking about the levels of management. So is the DFX philosophy being something that follows through the whole program? Does management function that same way, right? Are they keeping in mind that the methodologies and policies that they are, you know, mandating and enforcing, do they, you know, support that DFX mentality?
Yes, and I've definitely seen an impact of like a project manager, a program manager on quality and reliability. You know, even in organizations where I think, well, maybe at the mid-level, people don't care so much for reliability. I've seen individual project or program manager saying, hey, no, we got to do this right. I'm willing to take a hit on time and cost to make sure we've got the right level of reliability and quality. So I think even within the same organization, you can get variation from project to project depending on who's managing it.
So what do you think then for the ones you saw where project managers had that approach you just described? What was different? Why was that their approach?
They understood the value of reliability because you want to satisfy your customer. I think it has to do with the project manager realizing that the customer is their end customer. It's not the next level of management that is the customer. And, you know, the pressure sometimes for cost and cost and speed, and maybe their bonus is even their bonus might be tied to cost and speed of the project, but they still decide to do the right thing because they have the long-term view in mind.
But it's hard to do, right? I mean, so we're reliability engineers, if you put us in a project management position and you told me that my bonus was going to be tied to hitting time to market, even as a reliability person, just from a self, you know, preservation standpoint, I'm going to be pretty likely to sacrifice a lot of other things to hit that, right? So
you would, but your conscience would also tell you not to ship just anything to the customer.
Yeah.
You would still have a very high level of quality and reliability you would hit before you ship.
Right? So how could you do that? How could you have them receive, you know, that they feel like their bonus is tied to it, but they still feel that level of accountability? There must be some mechanisms you can create that would work in conjunction with that bonus. I think I can picture possibly tying the whole team to the long-term accountability, right? So what if, even though that bonusing is there, they know that they're going to be called into dealing with the field issues a year from now? So they're on their new exciting project and they get yanked back off it to deal with field issues. So that would create a competing concern for these other goals, right? I don't know.
Yeah, and I've seen companies shift their bonus structure from like an individual performance bonus, more like a team performance bonus, or even, you know, company performance bonus.
Yeah.
Where you could argue, you know, if you go quicker, cheaper, the company might be more profitable, where other people might think, well, you have higher quality, reliability, you're more profitable. And I guess it depends on your product and industry as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's an interesting thing. And it's something that across the board of all industries is a challenge. And like I said, I'm always so amazed at how it's an inverse relationship between the people who end up holding the bag in the end, the highest level management, and they're not putting systems in place that ensure that everybody holds the bag long term. And that inverse relationship just has always surprised me. And always looking for ways to help them change the way that, you know, they're doing their program structure, so that the team does hold it the same way the company does, right? Because the company's left holding it. It's you know, 2 years down the road, it still matters to the company. So it should matter to the team. So I think this is something, our next big area of growth for the reliability discipline is this: how do you get program and organizational structure and practices that ensure that consistency? I think we're going to see a lot happen with that in the coming years.
Yeah, there's still lots of progress to be made in the field of reliability management and achieving good reliability, or I would say for a lot of mainstream products.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good. All right. That was a good one, Chris. I'm glad. It's definitely an interesting one. And like I said, I think it's something that we're going to see a lot with in coming years, where there's been specific objectives for reliability in past decades of like going beyond military to general commercial products to, you know, being able to go beyond these methodologies, going beyond electronics to mechanical. That was a big phase. And I think this management and organizational practices and how they affect reliability tools getting implemented is a big thing coming up. So it was good, though. I'm glad we got to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, good. All right. Well, we look forward to your comments and questions, and we'll talk with everybody again soon, and we'll definitely respond. All right. Take care. Bye, Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Adam.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.